Okay, I'm probably going to speak for 10 minutes rather than 5 minutes, so I apologise in advance for breaking the rules of the chair. Okay, a number of archives of live and performance art have been or are being produced as this contemporary form becomes valued by museums or collections and gains significant cultural capital. And a couple of people who are developing those archives are here in the room, Heike Roms with her What's Welsh for Performance project, and also Matt representing Locus Plus, and Bex and representing the Live Art Archives at the University of Bristol. So whereas traditional scholarship appraises archives in relation to art historical narratives and reads documents as evidence of past events, I'm interested in models for the future use of documents in practice as research and the relationship of the archive to the future of professional art making. Due to the ephemerality and transience of performances, documents and recordings are held in archives or collections rather than the artworks themselves. Through research with Arnolfini and University of Bristol on the Performing the Archive project, I'm interested in ways in which this strand of recent art history can be conserved, communicated and understood transgenerationally. Nicolas Bourriard, in post-production, outlines the turn towards referentialism and remixing in contemporary arts. He writes that, and I quote, "An ever-increasing number of artworks have been created on the basis of pre-existing works. More and more artists interpret, reproduce, re-exhibit, or use works made by others or available cultural products." In Seven Easy Pieces, at the Guggenheim in 2005, this is a slightly stretched image, I apologise for that. Oh, it looks stretched on my screen and not so bad up there. In Seven Easy Pieces, Marina Abramovich recreates seminal performance art events, including Joseph Boy's How to Explain Pictures to a Dead Hare, pictured here. Jessica Santone, in 2008, proposes that these re-performances act as performative documents of the past works she cites. Although no duplicate event or restored act will be the same, you could go further to ask whether this is an appropriate preservation strategy, enabling work to circulate within its context of origin again as performance and through encounters with a new generation of spectators. To apply Rebecca Schneider's analysis of what takes place in battle reenactment, although she cannot claim to be the original performer, Abramovich's body in this reenactment becomes a kind of archive, one of the remains of an art historical event and a host to cultural memory. Live experiences take place between these enactments and the audience present, which are as immediate and as mediated as those produced by the originals, which were also referential. We can think also of the Whitechapel's History of Performance series of reconstructions and André Lepecky's redoing of Alan Caprow's 18 Happenings in 6 parts. In a culture of remixing, open source, peer-to-peer, Creative Commons and copyleft, there has been a significant generational turn towards what Lilibeth Cuencha called practices of recycling and sampling remains. And this is an image of Lilibeth's work, Lilibeth Cuencha Rasmussen. Lilibeth's work can be read as an embodied historiography, a critical re-performance rather than a rewriting of art history. Scripted into different time-based sequences, various art historical stories are told by each recomposition of extracts in her Women on Painting series. In Never Mind the Pollock, Anna Mendieta encounters Yayoi Kusama, superimposed with a contemporary form of cultural expression, pop music performance. In A Void, a sequence of 13 recreations of painting acts were curated and redone by the artist, the indices or traces of which are overlaid and build up cumulatively in the gallery like a palimpsest. This included a revision of Eve Klein's anthropometries played across gender. Different artists' signatures are channeled through Lilibeth as past works are quoted and recontextualized in a live archival assemblage. Different times and cultural contexts might touch or be folded together, and different agencies meet and collaborate. These performances as archives redo documents, using the texts and images that remain as scores, remediations of documents through performance. Of course, there's a history to such practices of remaking. For example, we might think of Paul McCarthy and Mike Kelly's series of Vito Acconci works recreated with porn stars in a Hollywood mansion. I'll touch on one further contemporary example. Ian Forsyth and Jane Pollard's Walking After Acconci redirected approaches, updates, recontextualizes, and remediates Vito Acconci's walk over indirect approaches, with Plan B, a young grime MC from East London, playing Acconci. This unfaithful reconstruction superimposes two eras and quotes two forms of cultural expression, performance art to camera and pop video. They've since made a response, a further revision or transfer, with female MC Miss Odd Kid wrapping her cross-gender version of Acconci's text, Walking Over Acconci, Misdirected Approaches. Are these reenactments of performances that have gone before, or enactments of documents? Do they carry some memory of the events that produce the documents they use? In Abramovich's case, Rebecca Schneider pointed towards the events being staged from the documents in order to document again for the future. She called this re-documentment. Is there a significant difference between these reenactments and doing instruction-based artworks again, following scores that have been published and distributed? My own work with the Performance Reenactment Society here at Arnolfini recently included a montage of acts with paintings after Yoko Ono's grapefruit collection, with public participants and landscapes purchased off eBay. These enactments were part of the cover of a book as the beginning of a journey, an exhibition of bookworks you do rather than read, which Julian was co-curator on. So, let's think of an archive as a palette of practical memories, a given field of possibilities, potentials, which acts as an intermediary or a guardian angel that lies between practitioners, between makers and new moves in the space of their art. Rather than securing the archive as economic capital, we might characterize this well or reserve of performance knowledge as a muse. Interactions with its documents produce inspiration for innovations in performance across generations. New arts practices, which are themselves recorded for inclusion in an evolving resource. As Julian and Jeff have pointed out, Creative Commons offers an intellectual property rights model that enables copies of artworks and recordings of events to be redistributed, released for authorized use and reuse, licensed for reenactment and creative remediation in other forms. Viral, web-based digital artworks are reliant upon continued dissemination from user to user to remain live. In document, perform, collaborate, perform, document, Rebecca Schneider, and this was presented here alongside the launch of Manuel Vasson's book Encounters at Arnolfini. In this paper, Rebecca Schneider proposed opening the temporal frame of the event to what comes after. A performance continues to take place through the dissemination of its documents, our time-based encounters with them, in archives or beholding them in displays. The work is passed on through oral accounts, rumours, hearsay, reviews and reinterpretations in print. It circulates and recirculates in the cultural scene, both as performance and in representations, remaining live through research, review, reuse, remediation, re-performance and reenactment. That's quoting Schneider. The conservation of performance and the preservation of performance archives depends upon the continued circulation and recycling of documents, including re-exhibition and remakes, remixes, recreations and redoings of these documents, iterative mediations and appropriations across generations.
Activities that we can do. We did get some kind of discussion going on what all four of you have said, but particularly Paul and Judith, we haven't kind of picked up on any of those points yet, but generally. And I just wanted to kick it off by saying that what you said chimed in with something that Julie and I were talking about when we were meeting to kind of plan this session, which was thinking about how transcription had always played a role in art historically, you know, the ways in which artists were trained by paying their dues and to the previous masters by producing copies. And the ways in which that differed from current ways artists reinterpret who passed out. You know, there's very distinct differences between that practice, that old practice, and the new ways in which artists approach past art. But wondering how to characterise that.
Yeah, thinking about the artists with their ears in front of the old master doing a copy to learn, try and copy exactly in order that they can then get rid of it and move on and do something else, whereas the perhaps this in terms of performance and creation kind of mingles both as a sort of copying, but as a work in itself rather than something to be done as a stage in an education.
I'm not sure they're so distinct. I mean, it's interesting the term transcriptions in relation also to working from transcriptions, which Will was talking about earlier, and equally, you know, I guess what's happening in, say, someone like Lilibeth Kuncher-Rasmussen's work is she's working from a whole collection of documents in quite a similar way, really, in order to recreate particular art events. It would be hard in a way to speak about it in terms of copying. I mean, in a way, what I'm trying to suggest is that we need to question the relationship between these, which already we have been this morning, questioning the relationship between these reenactments and the event, originary event. Obviously we need to question that also. But what I'm trying to suggest, I guess, is that it's very difficult in a way for the new generation of artists to copy the event. Instead, they're making copies through performance of the document, or they're enacting the document, using the collection of documents as a kind of score in order to create new works. I think it's important to question the relationship between those new works and the works that the documents they're working from purport to record. But there is a sense of attempting to understand practices, particularly at the moment from the 1960s, through redoing the documents of those works. And I think it is experiential in the way that we might develop a painting, our craft of painting, through attempting to reproduce the brush strokes of old masters. I don't think it's so distinct.
Do you not think that the those actions are just, you know, they're so much more polemic. It seems to me that there is almost something, you know, there is almost something inherently polemic, actually, in that, you know, that like in Abramovich's pieces, sort of, you know, redoing a voice piece or something. It just seems that there's a sort of provocation just inherently. I'm just thinking on my feet, I'm not quite able to articulate how that is. I mean, it's clear in some things, like for instance, in Ina James' piece, which I agree, I think is a great piece. Is, you know, the equivalence is made there, the provocation is absolutely, you know, completely clear. It's get this young rapper, you know, to just overload you with all this kind of misogynistic language. So, you know, the provocation is just completely clear. But it seems to me that it's there elsewhere as well, actually, in these kind of restages. And I always find a bit, I'm never quite convinced by the argument that these are done to try and sort of understand something. You know, I wonder about that. I wonder, is that really the case?
That's why I was also, in a way, that's why I'm also talking about, say, Lilibeth's work, talking about that in a way as a kind of a way of doing art history, in a sense of doing an art historical critique. And in a way telling new art historical stories through practice.
Yeah, of course.
I think that's certainly taking place in her work and also in Jane's work.
Is it not just another layer in the fiction upon the fiction? I mean, is it the idea of mining something of truth out of something which is in a way documented in a fictitious manner, or, you know, presents an idea of something rather than the reality of it? I find that kind of odd for it to be something just being truthful or reenactment of something that is truthful in its originality.
But it's trying to undo that, isn't it? I mean, one of the interesting things with Abramovich taking up that strategy, because Abramovich has so often been spoken around and has herself spoken around the uniqueness of the original performance event and the kind of live body-to-body encounter.
Yeah.
You know, it's once only kind of uniqueness. Mm. And there she is kind of provoking in a way the kind of performance studies community who might have spoken about the ontology of performance being in kind of ephemerality and, you know, the uniqueness of the event. She's kind of provoking that community through these redoings.
Not least by commissioning new work as a contribution to an archive. You know, I mean, that's really interesting strategy, isn't it, she's taking? Just commissioning completely new work, you know, nothing to do with, as part of her archive, there's nothing to do with her work as such.
Yeah.
It's just using it as a kind of point of departure.
I really agree with what you're saying. I think, you know, but I think the question to ask is why? Why is it then that people, you know, come to this, see this as a way of kind of establishing either a new archive, questioning it, or more pertinently, kind of questioning an old one, or using it as a tool to access something. And I think to understand that, you've got to really look at where the origins of where these kinds of ideas of reenactment come from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think particularly when you look at its role in documentary practice, in film documentary practice, there is always a connection, all right the way back to the early 20th century, with the idea that it hinges on kind of revealing of a truth about something,
mm-hmm.
that it sort of tends towards a sort of, some sort of, you know, factual. There's a factual thrust, and of course, if you go all the way back to, you know, Fantasy of the North and those kind of early documentaries, they are completely constructed and fictional, mm-hmm. of course. But a myth that is brought with them, and I think it's, you know, it's kind of brought with them to here with us right now too. But the thing is, you know, I think that's an interesting thing.
Well, in mythology.
Yeah, immense possibilities, really. That's, you know.
I guess it's the, you know, it depends on the intentions, I suppose, of the practitioner in terms of what, the audience interpretation is and their actual intention, I suppose, is where the interest lies, I think, for me.
I was thinking about what you just said, Ron, and that idea of it revealing truth. And then thinking about the difference between the kinds of artistic reconstructions that you're talking about, and there's something Judith mentioned in the anthropological videos that she's working with, which is a cultural community doing certain cultural things, like playing music in a certain way, or dancing in a certain way, or singing certain songs, and then through some kind of big social change, migration, war, whatever, famine, losing that, and then returning to it 20 years or however long it is later, and you're finding they're doing the same things. And if that was in Britain, that would be called heritage and disparaged horribly for being some kind of terrible, inauthentic return to Morris dancing, or, you know, those kinds of, non-traditional. Whereas in your context, it could be argued to be, you know, the resilience of human culture against disruption. And I'm really interested in how repetition or return to certain cultural forms is valued in certain contexts and not in others, as authentic or inauthentic, or truthful or somehow falsifying it. And also I was thinking about Yvonne's song archive, because we haven't really spoken about it here, but you know, the way you get people to sing songs that are from, presumably from their memories and things like that, and they're always repetitions, they're always based on, it's not Frank Sinatra singing My Way, it's so-and-so on the street singing My Way, but it's referencing Frank Sinatra. But it's not less authentic, it's not, you know, so it does seem, I suppose what I'm trying to get at is that the ways in which material gets repeated and how we then interpret that repetition that we work in is so hugely dependent on the context in which we encounter it and the framing of it. And I sort of agree with Rod that all these recent artists reinterpreting stuff has to be seen as a very polemical, deliberate provocation rather than a sort of, rather than as a some kind of neutral epitome.
I'm not suggesting it is, no. Neither am I. I think the work that I'm showing is I think it's very clear in the image that they're not very concerned with truthful reconstruction. Even if actually there's considerable research that goes into the production of the work in the way that you know Rod's carried out, inevitably you become interested in the gaps and the impossibilities of an authentic reconstruction, and in a way that's where the interest in the work lies, is in its recontextualization and in its kind of misappropriation and in what happens differently in a new context and in a new time. And again, you know, this is perhaps returning to documents of artworks, but at the same time, it's particular artworks that are being chosen that have some kind of resonance with contemporary practice and intervene in contemporary art practices, I think.
And I'm looking at the concepts of montage, which, I mean, one is the physical montage on the screen, but then the Russian like Eisenstein with the concept of montage, which were based on tensions. So although, yes, there's a reenactment going on and some people are buying into it, of course there are other people who aren't and who are playing missionary music and who have sites focused on how to get to America and distancing themselves from that, because that reenactment is associated with the idea of wanting to return home. So all those things you need to have all different contexts and tensions and conflicts to tell the truth, not the truth, but to tell the, not the full island, but to tell the story.
I think you can certainly think about some of these works as kind of temporal montages, and hopefully they do make you think differently about linear art history. Hopefully they kind of undo our sense of linear art history. I think in a way we need to let go of, or we need to be very critical of the use of the term reenactment, and instead it might make much more sense to talk about the enactment of document, because I think the relationship between the event produced by artists making these enactments, it's the relationship between that event and the event that was originally documented is quite questionable in terms of, and in a way you were raising that this morning too, in terms of, well, does the purported reenactment carry some memory of the event that was previously documented? I think we need to question.
I think showed that with the attendees that were at the original event. Yeah. So I was thinking that when you were talking about it, I was thinking, well, surely there must have been some people in the village that must have been around. And then you came to it, and just thought that was really interesting that they, like you were saying, what you were saying earlier about the whole thing of them remembering it when it was wrong or deemed to be different.
It's interesting there that it's the differences. It's the differences that trigger memories.
Mm. Anyway, I made the point that the original event was, of course, informed by previous events, and that nothing is really original. It's always informed by memories and by experiences. So it's a kind of boring thing.
So the works are themselves referring to other kind of cultural and art historical moments.
And like I was saying, in a cultural context, the idea of home in the 60s, but 100 years ago there was a major displacement, so home is a relative term anyway.
I mean, Michelle brings up a good point in terms of connecting. Folk performance and performance art history, in a way. I think there's quite an interesting relationship there in terms of the way that folk performance is held in an embodied way through the redoing of the folk event each year by new generations of performers, and through those redoings, rather than remaining the same, the continuity is through the performance becoming different each year and when performed by different bodies. And in a way, it might be possible to think differently about art historiography in terms of the continuity of practices through different generations and through appropriation and redoings.
Something really odd about thinking in terms of folk cultural, popular cultural contexts, is that reenactment in battle reenactments and those kinds of things often seems the lowest form of low culture. I think they're very, very looked down upon in some ways. They're very negatively valued, especially. So it's very interesting, I think, that this has become something that we're interested in contemporary art practice at the same time as popular that it's kind of sneered upon.
I mean, one of the things is, though, with folk practices, which are in the recital, is that they are also often quite openly based on a rupture and on a reinvention, which people are aware of.
Yeah.
I hang out quite a lot with folk performers. And they, if you talk to the Marshfield mamas, there was a period where there no mummy took place. So what they did was they went back to the original documents and kind of started reinventing their practice. So our idea is that this is a continuity, it's not actually true. And actually folk practitioners are aware of that kind of reinvention very much. So cutstones and so on, these are all not, they're not being practiced for centuries.
But this is one of the reasons why Morris dancing thinks it's sneered upon, because it's seen as inauthentic, in fact. It's seen it because they know it's an historical invention.
But most of these practices are, living in Wales, the East Death World, which is sort of the core cultural event, is everybody knows it was invented in the early 18th century. Everybody knows that it was an invention. It's not an illegal practice.
But it's true, it's kind of continuity since is quite interesting, but in a way a kind of living tradition has been invented from a kind of fake lyric event that was constructed from documents, sometimes a single kind of sentence description.